Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Roundtable Talk. Our goal is to share fresh perspectives about aging, retirement, longevity, and a variety of other topics related to issues facing today's older adults. To say that I'm excited to introduce our first ever guest would be an understatement. Joining us is Garrison Keeler, a man whose accomplishments and resume are too long to mention here, but I'll list a few things. 40 years as host of A Prairie Home Companion, best-selling author, a member of the National Radio Hall of Fame, one of the funniest people in America at any age, and someone who refuses to let age get in the way of staying busy. Garrison, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Roundtable Talk.
It's my pleasure. Good to talk to a fellow Midwesterner, howbeit one from North Dakota.
Yes, indeed. I can't think of a better way to kick off the podcast, especially for me personally. As you mentioned, I'm from North Dakota and a fellow Golden Gopher. I've attended many of your book readings around the Twin Cities, and our family even journeyed to California to your final broadcast from the Hollywood Bowl.
I remember that Hollywood Bowl show very well. I took the wrong exit coming off the stage. After the show was over, we stood around with the audience for a while and we sang. We sang all these old songs. And then I took the wrong exit and I found myself in a crowd of people leaving the bowl. And it was wonderful. We mixed and we mingled.
That's great. That's wonderful. And I know you often do that. You'll come down into the crowd after the after your shows. And I remember you telling a story because when we were there, it was in the evening, and typically your broadcast is live at 5 o'clock Central, I think, which would be 3 o'clock Pacific. And you said it had to be done in the evening and tape delayed because you had done it once before in the afternoon, and in the California heat in July, you don't want people sitting out there for 2 hours under the hot sun. So, as of last week, you're 82. Happy birthday, by the way.
I went out on the road doing shows to avoid having a birthday party, but I made the mistake of telling audiences that I was doing this, and so they all sang to me anyway. So I heard it 8 times in 10 days.
Well, I can promise you I will not sing happy birthday to you right now.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, yes. But you haven't slowed down. As we were just talking about, it's been 8 years since your last episode of A Prairie Home Companion, but you're still writing, still traveling and touring. What's your secret? What keeps you going?
I lost my ambition, I think, is the answer. And I'm doing it for the pleasure of it. And I cut back on some things. I no longer go and do lectures to groups.
Okay.
That was pointless because I was trying too hard to speak to their particular interest. And so I've started this new enterprise as an octogenarian stand-up. I do a solo show, and there's some audience singing a little bit, and I toss in some poems, but I string together stories, but each show is different, and because I don't work from a script, and it's just great fun. I also enjoy writing a column. I write 2 a week, 750 words, and it's a wonderful form. I try to stay away from politics, though it's not always possible. And
there's a little bit to write about when it comes to politics right now, right?
Well, that. Yeah, but other people are are writing in a much more interesting fashion. And I don't pay that much attention.
Good.
But there are, you know, interesting characters, as we all know, and it is always a good subject for satire.
Indeed. Now, you mentioned that you'd like to live to be 97, just like your mother. What are you looking forward to as you age?
Well, I'm hoping to continue to be lucky. People I know who get into the 90s decade, run some real risks that we all want to avoid. But medicine is marching forward, and I think that they're solving some of these problems. I had a stroke, I think, about 5 years ago. But in the meantime, this anti-seizure medication has come along, levetiracetam, and they can increase this dosage. I had a little episode doing a show out on Long Island, I think 2 years ago, of aphasia. It came at the end of a show. I was about to say good night, and then I couldn't form words, and I stood there, and something, you know, the audience looking at me, and then something clicked in my brain, and I started to sing Auld Lang Syne. And so that made a fitting end to the show. And a stage manager came out and guided me backstage, and the EMTs were already there, these wonderful men. And, they packed me off on a gurney and took me to a hospital and so forth. And they simply upped the dosage of this levetiracetam, and it never has happened since.
Well, thank God. And boy, you know how to end a show, don't you?
Medicine is on our side.
And indeed.
And so this, I think, offers some real possibilities. My mother was good right up till she, I think, hit around 96. But it wasn't so bad. She carried on conversations with her beloved sister, Elsie, who had died a number of years before. But she was conversing with her, and she paused and listened to some sort of response, and then she responded to what she thought Elsie had said. Not a dreadful thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And since you're talking about some of your health episodes, I happen to have your book Cheerfulness here and was reading it. And it was interesting. You were talking about, I believe it was a pig valve that you had installed. Is that correct?
Yes. A valve from a young pig. And Dr. Duraney at Mayo Clinic did the work. And it was a clean, successful operation.
That's great. I think you said in the book that you're appreciative of the pig, but you're not now suddenly going to become a standard bearer for pigs and pig treatment, right?
I have avoided pork since I had this procedure. I just felt it was the decent thing to do.
That's great. In 2017, you said in an interview that relaxation is a dangerous thing. It's to be avoided. Retirement is very perilous. You know, 7 years on, do you still feel that way?
I'm not sure. I think that relaxation, by relaxation, I think I mean just sitting around, but there is room for meditation, but meditation is a discipline. And I think that I accomplish meditation by way of writing, and that I do it early in the morning. I sometimes wake up at 3 and 4 in the morning. I'm awakened by ideas, and they are not always taking the form of words, but they want to. And so I arise in the dark, and I make coffee, and I sit down, and I try to put them into words. To me, this is a crucial thing that was helped along by the fact that when I was 62, 20 years ago, I simply stopped alcohol. And I did it because I had a little girl, and I was a two-fisted drinker. I didn't embarrass myself. I don't think I did. But I didn't want her to grow up with this father. And so I simply stopped.
That's interesting.
That restores your early morning.
Sure, it does.
You rediscover the early morning. Before that, you know, your early morning can often be hung over, and you may not recover until afternoon, and you lose a real asset as a writer, a real asset.
And sure.
I'm glad I discovered that when I was 62.
That's great. Hey. No time like the present, right?
Yes, it's never too late.
Never too late. Well said, well said. Now, I'm curious. You said you sometimes wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning with an idea. You fix a pot of coffee. Do you have a tape recorder, an audio recorder, or do you mull it over in your mind? How do you hold on to those ideas? Because I find some of those things that, you know, I have clarity when I wake up, and by the time I'm moving about, it's gone.
You have to put them down on paper, I think, is helpful. I don't sit down at a laptop, but I sit down with a paper and pen, and I want to put down whatever words come to mind, sentences if possible. But when I'm working on a book, which I'm doing now, when I'm working on a book, then I have a framework for these ideas. There's some place in this book for this to go. I'm working on a Lake Wobegon novel now, and I'm up to 40,000 words, and I think I'm probably about two-thirds of the way done.
Oh, great. Great. Well, in the book Cheerfulness, you talk about the delete button and how, you know, talk a little about that. I loved your story about, you know, how freeing the delete button can be.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's the best thing. If there were only, you know, some way that I could take a ray gun and delete a whole piles of things on my desk, I would do it.
That's
my
great.
My bookshelves are full of books I will never read, and so I'm at the deletion stage of life.
Sure.
I want to make life smaller and smaller.
And how are you doing that? I know when we talk with folks who are, you know, in their 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, downsizing is a big part of it. But you're still, you know, out there living your life. You're still traveling. How are you kind of sorting through everything and determining what to keep, what to set aside?
The big change came when I decided to live full-time in New York. My wife loves New York. She's a Minnesotan, but she came here when she was 16, 17 to study violin at Manhattan School of Music and to become a freelance violinist. And she lived here through many years of near poverty as a musician. And so she really learned the city, and she learned self-sufficiency. She learned to combat depression by walking. Walking. And she's a walker in the city. She does 6, 7, 8, maybe 10 miles a day. I came here because she had lived my life in St. Paul when we married. And now that I left the radio show, it was her turn.
That's great.
So I came to the city because whatever you can do to make your wife happy is a good thing to do. And moving to the city, where I'm a stranger, suddenly my time becomes very free.
That's great.
I know a few people. I used to work at the New Yorker magazine. I have a few friends from there. But mostly my time is very free. I don't drive anymore. And so I'm a pedestrian, and suddenly life becomes much, much simpler. And I'm not in charge of an office of people. I was never a good manager. And so that part of my life is all over. I simply get up in the morning and I need to take care of myself.
That's great. That's great. So do you see a day when you'll truly retire, when you're no longer touring and performing for audiences? What does retirement look like for Garrison Keillor?
Performing has its own end, and it will come to an end.
I hope it's a very, very long in the future.
Well, I don't know. I just hope that I recognize it before other people do. But I think it has a good way to come. I think that I do a different sort of show than most stand-up comics. And I have so much material from having done monologues about Lake Wobegon that I can weave it in different directions. I can revise it. I can play with it. It's a very playful thing. I never try to memorize or work from a set outline. So it's fun to do. I stay away from politics. Other people do that much better. And I am working with an audience, people my age and their children and some of their grandchildren, who, when I say it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, they laugh. They recognize this. I somehow, without intending to, I became a familiar person to them. And I say, it's the town where all the women are strong and the men are good looking and all the children are above average. And they laugh.
That's great.
I say, I refer to Ralph's Pretty Good Grocery. If you can't find it at Ralph's, you can get along without it. And they laugh. And so onward we go.
That's great. That's great. Now, more recently, you wrote on your website, the beauty of octogenarianism is freedom. Your career is over. You're done. You look out at the crowd and see people Googling your name to figure out who you are. You were just mentioning that there is a wide age range at your group, at some of your shows. Can you expand on that? Does it really happen? Or I'm sure there was a lot of, self-deprecating humor in there, but I love that quote.
I walk out into the lobby. I like to exit through the audience. And I like to stand out in the lobby. I've been lucky so far. I only picked up COVID once. And here comes a young woman with a nose ring. Here comes a middle-aged woman whose left arm is covered with tattoos. These are people I didn't know were in my audience. There are plenty of men with ponytails. There are plenty of male couples who appear to me to be couples. I'm sure they are. And so it's interesting to go out and see these people. And they want to tell me, you know, I grew up with your show. I love your show. My father, my late father, loved your show. And you listen to that, and then you start asking them questions. And they're happy to talk about themselves. And in this way, you learn about your audience, and you also pick up material that you can use farther down the road. It's a very, I hesitate to use the word joyful, but it is actually sort of joyful. They are fond of me in ways that I'm a little embarrassed by, but I turn the tables on them and I find out, what do you do? What do you do? Not just how do you earn a living, but what's your purpose? What are you here on earth for? And tell me a little bit about your parents and your ancestry. And they will talk and talk and talk. It's fun.
That's great. I do remember a time our family was at a performance of, I think it was Twelfth Night with Mark Rylance, and we were leaving the theater, and you happened to be standing there amongst the crowd. So went up and introduced myself and our son, who was probably, you know, 12 or 13, was there. And I just remember you putting your arm on it or your hand on his shoulder and leaning in and asking him, you know, questions about him, just like you just said. And it was really, I think, a meaningful time for him. So that's wonderful.
It was a meaningful time for me.
That's great. That's great. Well, you know, you have a few shows coming up in September, as we've talked about, and the theme is cheerfulness. And it's the title of your most recent book, as I mentioned earlier. Do you think that America needs some cheering up?
I do. I do. I think that politics, government has become discouraging to many people. And but I think that the big enemy is isolation. And many people are more isolated than I remember being in my middle years, partly as a result of this technology that you and I are using right now, which makes it possible for many more people to sit alone at home, do their work, have some kind of social life on social media. But it's a perilous life, to my mind. And I remember my social life when I was in college. I remember family gatherings. I remember the close proximity of people playing on a softball team, sitting in a beer joint, a whole group of men packed into a booth, and alcohol was not the main reason to be there. The main reason was to talk and tell jokes, and we did this. I remember parties where people stood around and sang, and I'm not sure that I have a sense that we are leaving this culture behind. I try to keep it going in the shows that I do, and I find a way to ask the audience to sing My Country Tis of Thee, Sweet Land of Liberty. If they are singers, which I would say most audiences are, we would go on and maybe sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic. If they're in certain parts of the country, surely if I did a show in North Dakota, rural Minnesota, Utah, oh, wow, Mormons, I do a show in Utah, and we are definitely going to sing hymns. We're going to sing Abide With Me, Fast Falls the Eventide. We're going to sing When Peace Like a River Attendeth My Way and Sorrows Like Sea Billows Roll, Whatever My Lot Thou Hast Taught Me to Say, it is well with my soul. And the singing.
That's great.
I did a show at the Methodist camp in Ocean Grove, New Jersey. And I walked out into the crowd and we sang It Is Well With My Soul. And sitting in a seat on the aisle, I walked in, I would say about 20 rows in. It's a huge, big auditorium. And sitting in an aisle seat all by himself with a pair of motorcycle boots was Bruce Springsteen. And he was singing It Is Well With My Soul.
What an amazing story.
What an amazing sight.
Yeah.
very nice guy. He came backstage afterward and, you know, we talked a little bit.
That's great.
That's the culture that I come from, and I accept that it is changing, but I don't want it to change too fast and entirely.
No, I
but I have,
I feel that
I have great nephews who admit to me they do not know the words to the Star Spangled Banner. I don't like that.
I agree. It's amazing how some of those things that you take for granted are not mm-hmm. being passed along.
I don't like that. I'm an old Democrat, but I don't like the fact that they have not recited the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and to the Republic for which it stands. They do not know. I would like them to know the Beatitudes. I would like them, you know, to be able to recite the Lord's Prayer, but I especially would like them to be able to sing songs with other people.
That's beautiful.
Without looking at your cell phone.
That's right. Hey, I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about your book, Serenity at 70, Gaiety at 80. Mm. And I have a copy of it here. You describe it as a book about the joyfulness of aging. In it, you tell stories about the beauty of getting older, getting kissed by Meryl Streep, and about mortality. You also offer 23 rules for aging. Can we talk about a few of those rules?
I don't remember those rules whatsoever. My memory does not include things that I myself have written.
Well, I'll remind you of them if that's okay. So rule number three uh-huh. was that regret is not so interesting. You know, you talk about here about letting go, moving on. Do you have any regrets?
I do. Of course I do. I do.
And you don't have to share them, but just curious.
Uh-huh. No, I absolutely do. I think I worked too hard for a period of my life, and I don't think I was a particularly good father. I don't think children are absolutely dependent on their parents. I certainly was not. My father worked double time. I had aunts. I had a number of aunts who were very sympathetic in ways that probably my father was not equipped to be. But I do regret that. I had two marriages that did not work out, and of course I regret my part in that.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. Rule number four was remember where you're from. You tell a fantastic story about meeting a woman in Paris and telling her that you're from New York. She corrects you and says, no, you're not. You're from Anoka. So I know you talked about moving from St. Paul to New York. You've lived in New York for a few years now, but you're indelibly linked with Minnesota. Would you call yourself a New Yorker or would you call yourself a Minnesotan?
I don't know. It's not for me to decide. Other people can decide. My wife thinks that I fit in New York. I mean, I know how to converse with strangers, how to find some common base. I'm not all that patient going to concerts, plays. I'm not patient at all going to art galleries. I make up my mind much too soon, and I don't let the work seep into my consciousness the way I should. I think I am a Minnesotan, and I'm not even sure exactly what that means. I think it, first of all, it means don't think you're somebody, and I don't. I still have the sensation when I do my show and I come to the end and I say, thank you, everybody. I am embarrassed by applause. And I walk off stage and I don't know what to do. And stage manager says, go out there. So I go out there, but I find it embarrassing.
Interesting. So do you get back to Anoka often?
No, I don't. I don't get back often. I don't. Most of my classmates left Anoka, but I like talking to them on the phone. I'm missing a class reunion this summer. Some of the classmates whom I loved are gone, and I still find this very painful.
Sure.
Now one of them died by suicide, and I just cannot get into her death, and I keep running through in my own mind her last days, the last times I saw her, and I just cannot make sense of it.
I'm really sorry to hear that, and I know in this day and age, it feels like people are talking more about issues of mental health, and it's more acceptable to, you know, lean on other people. But, you know, obviously it still happens, and it's probably happening, you know, more regularly than ever in some instances.
So, yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Rule number nine, old age is foreign territory and you should enjoy it. You say, I make no bucket list. There's nothing I need to do before I die. Each day is sufficient unto itself. Do you really have no bucket list? Nothing that's unfulfilled?
I'm thinking. I don't think there is any big unrealized purpose. I can't think of any offhand. No, I think Shakespeare was right. He said, this thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong, to love that well which thou must leave ere long. And this is true. There's no time to waste. And so don't waste it. I did not sit and watch the Paris Olympics. I found YouTube which ran a nightly recap of it, but I didn't turn on the TV and sit and watch. I don't have that sort of time. I did get to see the Swedish pole vaulter, and I got to watch the incredible 1,500-meter run in which the American came up from nowhere and won it by about 2 feet.
That's great.
And the women's relay and the shot put and some other and the break dancing. My God.
The memes that are happening with the break dancing is amazing. I hear it's not coming. It's not going to be there in 2028 in LA. So once and done.
Won by a Canadian. I never associated Canadians with break dancing.
Yeah, that's amazing. But hey, it's great to have things like YouTube, and you know, and the ability to kind of have it be broken down and consume that kind of media when you want.
So, it saves time.
Yeah.
And this is crucial when you have less time.
Yeah. So I've got a couple more rules here. Rule number 18, be lucky. Here you talk about how luck is crucial and doing whatever it takes to improve your chances. And I know you touched on this earlier. You mentioned that you were lucky, but how lucky have you been? Where do you think luck has played into your amazing career, your life, et cetera?
I chose my parents well. And as a result, I think I am in pretty good, steady condition. I knock on wood. I had some wonderful teachers. I had a teacher, my first grade teacher, Estelle Shaver. I remember my elementary school teachers. I remember them very well. I would have to think hard to recall high school teachers and college instructors.
Isn't that interesting?
College instructors are a blur to me. But Estelle Shaver was my first grade teacher, and she noticed that I was having difficulty reading. And she kept me after school. I was the only one she did this for. I stayed after school, and I read aloud to her from Dick and Jane, standing by her desk. And when the janitor, Bill, came in the room to empty waste baskets, I remember precisely what she said. We're talking about 75 years ago.
And what was it that she said?
She said, "Listen to this boy, Bill. Doesn't he have a wonderful voice? He's entertaining me while I'm correcting workbooks."
Wow. That's great.
This was remedial reading, but she made this seem like a privilege that I had been given and that I was doing this as a favor to her.
With the power of a good teacher, right?
And I think that she changed my life. This little act of kindness, where it came from, I have no idea.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a beautiful story. Thank you. One last rule. Rule number 19. In this rule, you talk about not getting caught up in all of the outrage happening all around us. Do you think that's easier as you age, not getting hung up on just the world?
I do. I am sometimes with people who have a keen sense of outrage, and I listen to them, and they what they say makes sense to me. British people who are socialists and who are outraged at the corruption of the Tory party and the corruption of the monarchy and so forth, and who can tell about all of the shameful aspects of English history that the and the country profiting from the slave trade and so forth and onward.
Sure.
And I get all of that. It's history, but I don't share in it. It's somebody else's outrage.
Sure.
And I don't want to be diverted from what I feel I was put here for. Everybody's here for a reason, and we don't pick up our reason by admiring great people.
Interesting.
When I was in the eighth grade, I got a copy of A.J. Liebling, and I loved his writing for The New Yorker, and I wanted to be him. Well, I'm not, and so I put that aside. For a time, I wanted to be Franz Kafka when I was in college, but I'm not. So I want to focus on doing what I was put here for, and not waste anything.
That's wonderful. Now, is there anything about the aging process that surprised you?
I find that the decline of agility is just not a problem. I remember what it felt like to be young. I don't run anymore. I suppose I could, but it doesn't bother me that I can't. I have some balance problems, but you simply deal with them. My eyesight is still pretty good. I have a kind of a drooping eyelid, but you make accommodations for it.
Sure, sure. And
but life gets smaller. Life gets smaller, and I accept that so long as I can still do what I feel I need to do.
Talk a little about that. What do you mean by life gets smaller? I can imagine, but I'm curious to understand what you mean by that.
I am not nearly as interested in travel as I used to be. I will go any place to work. I will go off to Minot, North Dakota, and do a show. I think nothing of it. Take a taxi out to LaGuardia, and I have work to do, sitting, waiting, at the gate, and I get on a plane, and I'll sit and work, and I work all the time. So travel to work does not mean anything.
Interesting.
I have no interest in going back to Italy. I've been there. I don't have any curiosity about it. Asia. I've never been to Asia. And at one time I felt this was a terrible deficit, and now it isn't. I've never been to South America. I have done a few ocean cruises. I don't need to do any more.
That's something I've never done, is a cruise.
I could continue. It's a long list. But I wake up every morning with this sense of purpose. And to me, this is absolutely beautiful and all that I need.
That's wonderful. That's great. Now, Andy Rooney once said, the idea of living a long life appeals to everyone, but the idea of getting old doesn't appeal to anyone. How do you feel about that statement?
I disagree. I like to be old. I think it's humorous, and I like to comment on it, especially to younger people.
And I think they
regard this with curiosity, and I think that's a healthy thing. I think that every person in their 20s should have somebody in his or her 80s to pay attention to. I'm not sure that I did, actually, when I was in my 20s. I had a grandfather who died at 73. People were dying young back then. And my grandmother lived to be 84. I remember sitting with her when John Glenn made his flight, and she watched this with great enthusiasm and was sure that man would go to the moon. My grandmother was born in 1880, and she still was disappointed that her father refused to take her to the 1893 Chicago Exposition. She had wanted so badly to go to see a Ferris wheel, to see a moving sidewalk, to see other moving vehicles, and she was so disappointed. She was a very forward-looking person, who nonetheless had been a farm wife and was a wonderful baker, working with a wood-burning stove. And but she looked forward to progress. She believed in progress.
That's great. That's great. Well, you've had such an interesting career with your radio shows, your stand-up tours, as well as your writing. Which do you prefer, standing in front of an audience or writing at your kitchen table? Which feeds your soul?
I can do sitting at the table anytime I choose. You only get an audience when you're invited to do it. And so that's a piece of luck. But sitting at a table is always available.
That's great. That's great. Now, and I found it interesting, earlier in the discussion, you referenced yourself as a stand-up comedian. And I know I've been seeing that in some of your, recent writings and in your blogs and emails and such. I always thought of you as a storyteller. Not that the two are necessarily at odds with each other, but have you always considered yourself a stand-up comedian?
No. I would never presume. Stand-up comedy is a real art, and it's a particular gift. I have a niece, Erica Rhodes, who is 40 and is a fabulous stand-up comic. I admire her so much. She was just did Late Night with Stephen Colbert.
Oh, really?
She's got a big future ahead of her. I am a big fan of hers, so I don't put myself in that same category. But I go out on stage when I do this solo show, and I am standing up, and the territory between stand-up and story is a movable boundary, and so you can move back and forth. I don't want to be stuck in the position of being a narrator. I want to be able to speak in my own voice, even as I'm telling a story about invented characters. And so you keep going back and forth.
That's great. One last question. We'll end each episode of Roundtable Talk with this. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
I wish that I had stopped drinking when I was 25. Hmm. I think that would have been more than enough. Some people can do it, I guess. But I wish I had I wish I had stopped doing damage to myself. I have other regrets, but, you know, I don't know how to separate them out. I think that was one thing I could have done better and thus had more time to fulfill the purpose, whatever I was put here for. Because the truth is, life is not long enough. It simply is not.
Well, that's beautiful. A great way to end. So when can we expect your new Lake Wobegon book?
Well, I have an agent who's waiting for it. And if a publisher wants it, fine. But if a publisher does not want it, I'll publish it myself without any hesitation. In which case, I'll probably come out in the spring.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to that. Right. And Garrison, Ken, thank you enough for your time today. It's been a true pleasure. Safe travels as you crisscross the country doing your show.
Thank you so much.
All right. And thanks, everybody, for joining us for the first episode of Roundtable Talk.